Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to be discussing one of the hardest issues that's plaguing many couples in their marriages, and that's the topic of pornography and infidelity. So I need to warn you at the top, if you've got younger children in the room, you're definitely going to want to send them along to play elsewhere. This is an issue that does not discriminate against race, age, gender, or creed, and it's something that we must always be alert to. And to help me today, I've invited Chris and Cindy Beal to join me. They're going to share their personal story of grief and pain and how the Lord has ultimately helped them rebuild the trust and protection in their marriage. Chris currently serves as the campus pastor at lifechurch.tv in Oklahoma City, and Cindy is the women's ministry leader there as well. They've been married for 20 years and have three sons. Cindy's also written a book on their story, and it's titled Healing Your Marriage When Trust is Broken, Finding Forgiveness and Restoration, which we will be talking about today. Thank you all so much for coming here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
We're going to jump into it. This is a tough topic. Yeah. It's one that makes people uncomfortable for obvious reasons. But as the numbers show, there are a lot of people struggling with this. There's a lot of people not dealing with it, and it's destroying marriages.
Right.
So, Chris and Cindy, it's February 19th, 2002. Chris, you and Cindy were just getting settled in your new home in Edmond, Oklahoma. You had just begun as the worship pastor for LifeChurch.tv for 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
You'd been there 6 weeks. Cindy, you were at home unpacking boxes with your three-year-old son, Noah. Chris comes home unexpectedly around 9:30 in the morning. You know something's wrong, and he says, hey, can we talk?
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people have heard those words, and you know when it's something that, uh-oh,
yeah,
this is not going to go well. Chris, what took place?
Up to that point, Ryan, I think God brought me to a point when he moved us to Oklahoma. I kind of thought, honestly, this is my chance to have a do-over.
Yep.
You know, there was so much sin, broken promises, broken vows. And I literally thought, okay, God, this is a start over moment from you. Mm-hmm. What I really think God did was bring me into a position and to a place to deal with the sin, because I had never dealt with it up to that point.
How long had you been married at this time?
9 years.
9 years.
9 years.
Cindy, did you have any idea what was going on?
Mm-mm.
None.
There was a disconnect. Mm-hmm. We weren't always connecting there. And I thought it was just part of marriage. You go through years and you kind of fall apart, mm-hmm. and then you work hard again. I just thought it was kind of the ebb and flow of what happens with married couples. I had no idea.
Yeah. And so do you go in a different room? Do you go out? Where do you have this conversation?
We sat in
on a
couch that we had just purchased
24 hours earlier
that we hated for the following 10 years because of the conversation that happened on that day.
Yeah.
And our oldest, who is then our only child, we put on a video for him to watch in the other room, mm-hmm. and I just began to tell her about an addiction to pornography that started the time I was 8.
Whoa. And 8 years old?
8 years old. I saw the first image in a magazine. And Ryan, I'm 41, mm-hmm. and I can still see that image in HD in my brain.
Yeah. My dad talks about that in some of his books, that the way boys' brains are wired, those images at that stage in life burns it into your brain.
Absolutely.
There's a chemical reaction that burns it into your brain.
And so I'm trying to paint a timeline,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, her face, her countenance is just, it's just falling by the second. And it's a struggle that's, you know, been a part of my life forever. And like all sin, it's progressive. It's not ever a static thing. And I left it in the dark, didn't have right accountability. The real thing, I was never honest with anyone about it. I was always managing disclosure.
I can do this on my own.
Right.
Or, I don't want to tell anybody. It's embarrassing.
Or if I had an accountability partner, I would tell them 30 or 40% of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
As more of a smokescreen for them not to ask, well, is there anything else?
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And it had led to about 2.5 years prior to us moving to Oklahoma. It went from looking at things to then chatting with strangers mm-hmm. online, to then the first time where someone asked me if I wanted to meet, and I did. And, you know, you cross that line, it becomes very simple to continue to cross that line. And so over the course of about 2.5 years, I had been unfaithful to Cindy multiple times. One of the issues was there was a girl who I had been unfaithful on Cindy with, who texted me right before we moved to Oklahoma and said that she thought she was pregnant and that she was pretty sure it was mine. And so that took me a little bit to dump on her. And so it was pretty much the worst day ever.
Yeah. Cindy, I can't imagine. I mean, you're 9 years into marriage. You're 6 weeks into a brand new town. You can't know that many people. You don't have an accountability group and a close-knit group of friends and people you can call on.
Yeah, I had no one.
Yeah.
It was pretty much kind of, I guess, surreal. I don't know if another word would be better suited. But, you know, one minute I'm unpacking boxes and putting pictures in certain rooms, thinking where I'm going to put this. And 60 seconds later, everything's over. Everything's changed. I'm thinking I'm going to be a single mom. I'm going to have to go try to find a job again. I taught school. And so I thought, well, who's going to hire a school teacher who's been a stay-at-home mom? But I'm going to have to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mind just started going. But yeah, it was pretty much the worst day of my life. And then I realized that the next day was the worst day of my life as well. And it just was my own personal Groundhog Day over and over. I was Bill Murray, you know, and it was just over and over and over again.
Every day you wake up and the realization that wasn't a dream. This is really my life.
That is my life. That was my life for a season.
Yeah. Chris, obviously you said this started when you were 8. You know, it didn't happen overnight.
No.
Take us down that road. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to get graphic, obviously.
No, not at all. You know, when I'm a kid, all we had was magazines. Mm-hmm. And my dad had brought a magazine into the house. Mm-hmm. And it was under the bed. Didn't think I knew where it was. And, you know, since my dad's passed away, and he watched me go through the confession. And we've had some pretty amazing conversations, even to the point where he asked my forgiveness for that. And God did a real redeeming thing mm-hmm. in my relationship with my dad.
Well, I think that's a warning shot to dads out there.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. This is what I know. There are dads listening right now, and they're not at home, and you know on your computer at home, you've got something that shouldn't be there.
Right.
And your kids are there. And my guess is most of our kids are far more tech savvy than we are. Mm-hmm. What's the chance of them stumbling into your sin and it becoming their sin?
Well, and even if you pull out the practical aspect of what you just said mm-hmm. and just look at the spiritual aspect, if I'm a dad and I'm knowingly walking in habitual sin that I'm hiding mm-hmm. and I'm unrepentant and I'm dishonest about it, I think as dads, we are naive to think that that is not going to affect our legacy and affect the next generation, certainly practically, but I think also spiritually. Mm-hmm. And so that this whole thing, it was just this constant, it was subtle the whole time, mostly magazines.
But wouldn't you say that it really picked up when the internet came around?
Absolutely.
We were married before the internet really came about. Yeah. And so it just seemed to be kind of like hit or miss. And I knew briefly that that was happening. But man, once the internet was there.
Gas mm-hmm. on a fire.
It was crazy.
Well, and you got to think now, I wish I'd taken care of it before the gas got poured on the fire, before it became ubiquitous and in every household and so easy to hide.
Right.
And the access was so easy to get.
Right.
Here's my fear. I'm afraid there's someone listening right now that's struggling. They're struggling with pornography or they're struggling with infidelity and they're saying, I can do this and I can do it on my own. I can make those changes. I can do all this on my own and I want people to get help. I want them to be able to confess that. Is it difficult? Yeah, you said both of you. That's the hardest day of your life.
Absolutely. You know, I think there is a price to dealing with this thing. Can you do it on your own? No.
Mm-hmm.
We need God. We need each other. The question you have to ask yourself is, what's going to cost you more? Is it going to cost you more to bear the discomfort of having an honest conversation with another human being now? Or is it going to cost you more to live in the delusion that in darkness you can fix this? Because if you could have done that, you would have already.
That's right. If you could have fixed it, you would have fixed it. You tried for years and years and it didn't work. It took this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think with deception, self-deception and deceiving other people, mm-hmm. you know, that's really the only way you can kind of live the double life. You have to become a decent liar to kind of manage relationships and to not hate yourself. You know, you kind of lie to yourself that, okay, this is the last time I'm going to do this and
right.
This is it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it just, it was this constant thread. And just like Cindy said, when the, you know, when the internet came out, it became a huge problem. But, you know, when we got married 20 years ago, I thought to myself, okay, I'm recently a Christian. I got saved when I was 19. And so I'm thinking, okay, now,
right.
Now I'm good.
Yep.
Right. Now Jesus lives in me by mm-hmm. through the Holy Spirit, and now this won't be an issue. Well, guess what? Still an issue.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm married and I have a partner that I yep. can experience intimacy with. Now it's not going to be a problem. Became a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 years after that, I stepped into full-time ministry and I thought, okay, well, now I'm spiritual. And so now it's surely not going to be a problem. And every step that I took, it became a bigger problem. And with every step, it drove me deeper into a place of being mm-hmm. deceptive to myself.
And I
was totally in prison.
You're 6 weeks into your brand new worship pastor role, and you drop this on Craig, the head pastor, and then you're going to go home and tell your wife.
Right.
I mean, he had to be furious.
He was not happy.
Chris actually, he came home and he told me, and then he called one of our other leaders, senior leaders, Jerry, and Jerry came over. And when Jerry came over, then he called Craig and he's like, you have got to come over. And Craig really had a hard time even looking at Chris in the eyes. It was, we sat there in some silence for several minutes mm-hmm. because nobody, what do you say?
Yeah. And he gave Cindy a hug and said, we're going to get through this. And it was one of those things that at the time, I had no idea how this thing was going to get played out. I mean, more than likely, they're just going to, you know, gently and quietly sweep us off. Mm. We don't know anybody in Oklahoma. We have no friends and family.
And that would have been kind of easy for him.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, you know what? New worship pastor didn't really work out.
No.
We're going to get somebody new in. Don't worry about what happened.
Exactly. I mean, who wouldn't do that? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like the most obvious step to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so they loved on us. The elders surrounded us. Obviously, I resigned my position immediately.
Yeah.
And then they asked us to sign a legal affidavit agreeing to let the church, let Craig share any and all aspects of why I had resigned as he saw fit for the health of the church.
Oh.
And so the elders of the church came and said, you know, Chris, we want to be a covering over you, a covering of protection and guidance. But what that looks like is you're going to do everything that we say. And if you wake up one day and decide that you don't like the direction we're giving or the things that we're requesting, I think the phrase was, we're going to turn you over to your sin. I think that was the phrase that they used. And
that's serious.
It was serious. I mean, it was love, but it hurt.
Tough love.
It was tough love.
And so they came and took the computer out of our house, and that was not going to come back until they chose mm-hmm. to do so. They said, you're obviously going to have to get a job, but our requirements are you can't get a job where you travel, where you have a computer, where you would ever possibly be alone with a woman. And you know, from my perspective, I genuinely believed that this is my shot. This is it. This is my opportunity to get free.
Mm-hmm.
Will my marriage get saved? I don't know. In fact, doubtful.
Right.
Any chance of ever being back in ministry? Absolutely not. This is what's in my brain at the time.
But
the opportunity to be free of something that I had been a prisoner to for 20 years, you can ask me to do whatever you want. If you're willing to help me, the answer is yes.
That's an interesting position for a married couple to be in, because for you, as horrible as it is, you're getting a tumor cut out of you.
Right.
You're dying on the inside, and sure, I'm not going to be a minister anymore, and my marriage probably won't survive, which is terrible, and you believe that it's terrible, and I might get freedom for the first time. For you, Cindy, it can have been like, what's the light at the end of the tunnel? This is just everything for your future now is terrible.
Yeah.
Single mom, finding a job, finding friends. Are you going to move back home? The embarrassment of everybody's going to know. All of my friends, my family are going to know. And in a way, you got to feel like a fool.
Oh, totally. Because there were people who thought I was a fool if I stayed. And there were people who thought I should try and never, ever divorce and, you know, never. And so, yeah, there was a lot of advice. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, God just really protected us both, really, with some really wise people. And this one couple, Jim and Beth, they really rallied around us. Mm-hmm. And they had walked through infidelity early on in their marriage. And I remember they really didn't give me advice.
Yeah.
They didn't say
they were just there.
They were there. Yeah. And when I would get ahead of myself and think 3 months, 4 months down the road, they'd say, today's what we have, and this is what we're going to do. And they were just a very calming presence to both of us. And I wouldn't have made it without them.
Well, and I think you did a smart thing, too. You know, a few days into this, you said to yourself, okay, I need some distance. I've got to... I need a little space from Chris. Mm-hmm. I need some space from the church. I need some space for me. And so you packed up some things for you and for Noah. I mean, what's Noah doing at this point?
He's three. He's three.
So he knows something's going on.
It was a week before his third birthday. And so we went to Chuck E. Cheese on his third birthday. Right. And, of course, I'm just crying at Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, I'm just crying all the time.
Do you remember
know?
What he kept saying to you?
He kept saying, why are you so sad for Mommy? Yeah. And I'm trying to cover it up. Because, I mean, my child should not bear a burden like that. And thankfully, he doesn't remember that, you know. But I tell you, it was really hard. And I tried to take him out to the park. I tried to do as many things with him as I could, as a normal mommy would. But I was just a mess.
So then you packed up and you took a break. You went to your mom's.
I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just felt like I was feeling smothered, and probably not the moment of his confession, but pretty close after that, I just began saying, okay, God, what do I do? Do I stay? Because I had a man here who seemed to be pretty broken and repentant.
Sure. It's not like he's saying, hey,
get over
it,
lady. You know,
let's just,
how long is this going to take?
He didn't say, when are you going to stop crying? I mean, he grieved with me what he caused. And so I remember thinking, okay, well, it would be easier maybe if he was a jerk, because then I would be just like, I'm hitting the road, buddy. But he wasn't. And he looked at me and he said, you know, you need to decide what you want to do. But I want you to know, I know you'll never trust me again. But if you'll give me the chance, I'll spend the rest of my life trying.
Whoa.
And I thought, okay. So I began to pray and ask God for a word. And my friend Jimmy Pruitt, 20 probably years ago, said, when you really need to know what God's calling you to do, you need to ask for a word. And I said, what does that mean? He said, you need a biblical confirmation from God. And so I said, okay, God, I need to know. I need something. I don't want to just hear, stay. I want to hear a word that applies to me. So I'd been praying that. And that I felt like, I'm going to go to Texas. I'm going to hear a word. And that's what I'm going to do. And so that's what I did. And God did speak.
So you got to tell your mom what's going on.
I did.
How did she react?
Well, I told her on the phone and before I came down, and she handled it remarkably well. I mean, for someone to hurt your baby girl.
Amen.
I'm the baby of the family, and I don't think she ever even said anything mean to you.
Not
now, she
all.
Probably called her friends and said something, because I think I probably would. But she did a remarkable job.
And we decided as well, because we didn't know how this whole thing was going to play out. But one of the things that probably within the first week, we were having the conversation, well, who are we going to tell what to?
Oh, sure.
And it created this real confusion of, okay, if we don't disclose everything to everyone we know, then we're going to be in a posture to continue the deception, right? We're still managing perceptions, yeah. Which mm-hmm. is just, it's deception. And so we made it a choice that everyone we knew, all of our family, all of our close friends, the youth group that I had left in the previous state, we were going to tell them everything.
So we told everybody.
So we got on the phone
and
we called everyone. Yeah, it was terrible.
It couldn't have gone well. Cindy, you were down in Texas. Your mom made an appointment with a pastor for you. And I want to read this because it was so powerful, especially in today's day and age. Divorce is a part of most people's vocabulary.
Right.
We say that it shouldn't be, and yet it is. I have dealt with so many couples where they start having problems, and you can tell they're thinking that word. They're thinking they got a foot out the door, and maybe we just do a do-over. Maybe we just start over. But you meet with a pastor, and he says to you, I would respect you if you felt that you needed to remove yourself from your marriage. What you've endured is very hard, but you are not a fool to stay and be a part of the redemptive work in a man's life. That is powerful because you do. You feel like a fool. How could I not have known? How could I have been fooled for so long? How embarrassed am I? The shame. And he's telling you, you're not a fool if you stay. What did that do for you?
Well, it was my first glimmer of hope. And when he said that, it was about 2 weeks to the date of the confession. And so I had pretty much just resigned myself for a while that I was just going to be hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
But that gave me such a glimmer of hope. And I thought, okay, maybe I will stay. Maybe, you know, so it put maybe back into my mind.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to the spouse that says, I don't know. I don't know if I should stay. I don't know if I should go. I mean, my spouse has been unfaithful, and that is an exception. It would.
Right.
What do you say to that person?
Well, and I tell them, you know, first of all, no, you have to make the decision mm-hmm. because you have to live with it. I don't. I'm going to sleep comfortably tonight in my bed. I'm probably not going to think about your decision, but you've got to decide what God is calling you to do. In that first few days, you're thinking, I got to decide right now. I cannot let my life be ruined or wasted anymore. I got to decide. And finally, I would say, okay, listen, you don't have to make a decision that affects the rest of your life today. You don't even have to make it next week. You don't even have to make it next month. In fact, you could even wait 6 months. What's six more months of trying to decide? Now, some women will be like, or some men are like, no, I can't do that. But for me, that's the advice I give, because you don't want to make it when your emotions are so heightened mm-hmm. and unlevel.
Tell me now, you're back in the church, you're head pastoring. Cindy, you're leading women's ministry, and you've written a book on it that we've been talking about. It's called Healing Your Marriage When Trust is Broken, Finding Forgiveness and Restoration. What kind of ministry has been created from both of you finding freedom?
Well, I get opportunities to go and speak to different groups of women, and mm-hmm. that brings a lot of joy because I don't look to change the world. I look for the individual stories. And when I get the emails, countless emails, I got one last week where a man said, my wife was going to leave me, and she walked into the bookstore and found your book, and now she's staying. And those are the stories that I look for. So those are some really meaningful things for us, that the book has opened up mm-hmm. for that to happen.
Thank you all so much for coming here. And thanks for being honest. Mm. Thanks for being vulnerable. I know people are being helped today. I know it's not easy, but I want you to know I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to an interview I had with Chris and Cindy Beal from LifeChurch.tv in Oklahoma City. I want to let you know, if you are struggling in your marriage, if this program has touched you because you are in trouble, please call us. We would love to help you out. We have Christian counseling resources we can recommend to you. You can find that and many resources to help your marriage at drjamesdobson.org. We'll also have a link to Cindy's blog and her book, Healing Your Marriage When Trust is Broken. Again, that's at drjamesdobson.org. If you're listening and your marriage isn't in trouble, you're not struggling, but you'd like to help someone who is, We can help you do that here at Family Talk. It's what we're all about. You can donate online at drjamesdobson.org via our smartphone app, or when you call us, our number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your support. And we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. For those of you who enjoy our radio program, Family Talk, I have some good news. When you're not able to hear Family Talk right here on your favorite Christian radio station, you can catch us 24 hours a day by downloading the new and free Family Talk mobile app. Visit your app marketplace to download it today. And thanks for listening to Family Talk.